Welcome to the Making Money in Multifamily Show, where we discuss everything to do with multifamily real estate investing. We believe it's the best way to gain financial freedom and build lasting wealth. This is where you'll find the best information and practices to help you succeed in your real estate business, whether you're already experienced or just starting out. Here's your host, Dave Morja.
Hello, listener, and welcome to the show. I'm your host, Dave Morja, and with me today is Sean Graham. Sean is the founder of Maven Equities, which invests in self-storage facilities primarily in Michigan. He is a licensed CPA with a background in public accounting and private equity, and he currently has over $6.5 million under management between Maven and his personal holdings. Sean, welcome to the show.
Dave, thanks for having me on here. I'm happy to be here.
Yeah, thanks for joining me. I guess we can kind of dig in. You know, you're heavily in the self-storage space now. I know you have some residential stuff too. But the background as a CPA, how did you kind of go from A to B? You know, how did you get from where you are today?
Yeah, so I went to college for accounting. I went to Eastern Michigan University. That's where I graduated from. And I did my undergrad and graduate degrees in accounting. And I went and got my CPA license. And basically, I hopped around for a few jobs that didn't really work out in my favor. But in the meantime, I started building up my real estate portfolio. I started simply through house hacking in the Chicago area midway through my career. And eventually, I was able to transition, and now I'm full-time into self-storage.
Yeah, so, I mean, the self-storage, I guess maybe we'll start there. Like, what was it that piqued your interest there, you know, going from the residential into that? And yeah, I guess maybe we'll just start with that. Like, why did you go that avenue?
Yeah, you know, I think, you know, you listen to Bigger Pockets a lot, right? You start listening to those podcasts and you see everybody on there. They're all successful. They're all doing something. They're all doing something different. But eventually you just kind of have to pick a path. So it's like, what path calls to you? Like, what do you want to do? So I knew I didn't want to stay in residential real estate forever. I wanted to move from residential over into commercial, just because you have more control over the value of your assets in commercial real estate. But I didn't know how. I didn't know which path I wanted to go down. So, you know, you start, as Brandon Turner likes to say, right, you're kind of building the bridge here and there, and you start having these bridges. They're all halfway built, but none of them are actually getting across. So yeah, I think I heard it was AJ Osborne on the self-storage. He has a self-storage income podcast, but I heard him talk on Bigger Pockets and it just clicked. I was like, this is it. This is what's for me. You know, there's no one's living there. There's no, you know, toilets, there's no plumbing. Like, it's a simple business. It's a simple business model. And also, like, it has a really good financing. You know, I think when you get into commercial real estate, that's one of the most difficult parts, right? It's like, okay, I want to go do this. My track record is kind of limited. How can I break into this industry, especially as you're still building up your own equity and your own wealth?
Yeah, and the day we record this is June 17th. If you're following this week, interest rates went up and they're projected to go up and debt's going crazy left, right, and center. I don't know how it's looking on the storage stuff, but the multifamily quotes are off the rails right now. It's getting requoted day by day, it seems. So yeah, it's pretty funny to see what's going on right now.
It's scary because it's like, we don't know where cap rates are going, right? Everybody's been buying, I mean, people have been buying self-storage at crazy cap rates. Like, you're hearing like 4 or 5% cap rates for some of these like class A facilities, and even like the lower class facilities are going for like 6 caps. All of a sudden interest rates jump, you know, 1.5, 2 points. It's like, well, you can't buy a self-storage facility at a 6 cap if your interest rate's 6%. Like, it doesn't really make sense. Where's the value? So we're gonna see what happens here.
No, there's literally no leverage on a spread like that, right? So it'll be interesting to see how this stuff plays out in the next, I don't know, it's going to probably be longer than you think, possibly 6 months, a year, who knows, but I think eventually the dust will settle a little bit. We'll see some better deals here. But I wanted to rewind, Sean. You kind of mentioned that bit about the bridges, and I wanted to hit at that because I know your story is kind of interesting, how you got like really heavily involved in real estate. You mentioned you're doing the residential, but you kind of leaned in pretty heavy on the self-storage. So can you maybe kind of highlight that piece of it? Because I think it's a good piece to share with the audience.
the residential part, or which part exactly?
How you like leaned in full time into real estate, like how that came to be?
Yeah, so I went through a few jobs, and I was trying to make my way in the finance and accounting world. And you know, I'm very big on alignment now, and I'm somebody who I wear my heart on my sleeve. Like, I'm not very good at faking it or faking passion. And I was thinking about this earlier today, and it's like, you know, passion leads to knowledge, and then, you know, your knowledge, it creates confidence in like what you're doing, and that goes straight into job performance. Right. And so, first, you know, I started out and I was in public accounting, went and got my CPA license and everything. And I was in it for about a year. And then one day I got fired from my job. And I was like, okay, like, you know, I went down this path because I was told, hey, if you want to be an entrepreneur, that's fine, but you need to go get something that no one can take from you. So it's like, all right, I'll go into accounting. I'll go get my CPA license. I'll always have a job. And it just didn't really work out that way. Frankly, I was a little bit lost trying to figure out what I wanted to do. And it wasn't even after that. It took several years really for me to figure out, hey, real estate's the path that I want to go down.
Yeah. So getting into the full time, I mean, you've shown me a little bit like what you kind of dive into. You're full time, but also you leverage others' time. And I think the systems you kind of have set up are pretty interesting. I think you have, you know, quite a few things working for you to be able to essentially scale at a pretty decent pace, especially for how quickly, you know, you've ramped up. Do you want to just kind of hit at that? Maybe talk about, you know, how you've gotten into deal sourcing and those types of things. Because, I mean, you're very, for right now, at least, pretty niche, like self-storage in Michigan, right? Like that's where you've closed deals so far. So how do you build out those systems to actually get that deal flow so you have enough moving? It's a hot market. So you got to hit like 300 deals to get one done these days. So
yeah, it's super hot and everyone's doing it, right? Like,
yep.
You know, a couple of years ago, there was deals everywhere. And, you know, in retrospect, it's like anything else, right? Like you should have bought all the Apple stock 10 years ago and you should have bought all the self-storage you could have 5 years ago, right? But now it's very competitive, right? Like everyone is calling the mom and pop owners. They want to buy self-storage and it's tough. So, you know, there's still opportunity out there, but you kind of have to find a way to get ahead of the competition. So, you know, lately I have been focused on ground up development opportunities. And so, you know, it's really identifying and finding those pieces of land where, hey, this is going to work. And this is going to, you know, this will be a good place to create a like class A indoor climate controlled facility and build it. And it has enough, you know, if there's enough demand in the market, the rental rates are at the right price, the area is growing, the population's there, it makes sense. And that's like that's an area that I'm targeting. It's not necessarily the easiest, right? Because everyone has land and everyone's like, hey, like I'm just going to build a self-storage facility here. And it's like, yeah, okay, that may work, but you know, you're having like a few hundred cars drive by, you know, a day. Like it may not work either. So you really want to do it right. Like those are, it's a higher risk category, but that's what I've been mostly focused on lately.
Yeah. And, you know, I've seen your stuff before because we have, you know, quite a few hours together. You have this kind of matrix, right? Where you break down like kind of just highlights of like what's a go, no go for like the high level of a deal, you know, as far as demand for the market goes to build something. Cause you can't, right? You can't just like, okay, buy the land, build something without knowing there's demand for it. So what are you really looking for? What are the metrics you're kind of targeting and what's the like pricing on that?
Yeah. So, you know, I kind of have a system where my virtual assistants, they're getting really good and they're able to analyze deals and quickly filter through deals to see like, okay, is this something actually worth digging into? And so when you're looking at a piece of land for me, right, I want to get to know as quickly as possible. I want to find out like right away, like, why should we not build here? And so I have like a criteria checklist and it kind of goes through more like demographics and data to see like, okay, like, is this a place where we can, you know, where we should build? And, you know, the other thing is like, you can build all different types of classes of facilities, right? But like, if you're going to build a class A facility, your demographics have to be a little bit like higher income, and you have to have that population there. So, and it takes just as much work, right, to like go build a big Class A facility, like I'm talking like 100,000 square foot indoor climate control facility, as it does like 12,000 square feet of like drive up non-climate control. You still have to go through the engineering. You still have to get the architect work done. You still have to go through zoning, permitting. So it's like you might as well go for the big build. So regarding like the system, you know, my VAs, they're able to take a property. You know, we have a checklist. We have a checklist of criteria, right? So if somebody brings me a property, I say like, okay, look, here's the checklist. This is what we're looking for. Does it meet all of these, right? And so, Dave, if like we're working together, I have a tracker and, you know, you'd enter a property and then my virtual assistants, you know, would look at it and it's like, does it have the drive-by traffic, right? Like we're looking for like 15,000 vehicles per day. It doesn't have to be right on that highway, but those vehicles need to be able to see it. You know, we want at least 30,000 people in the population, right? Like within the 5 mile radius, ideally more than that. Ideally it's more like 50, but at least 30, or we're not even going to look at it. You know, we want the area to be growing. We want the median household incomes to be closer around 80,000. We want rents to be like $1.50 a square foot, right? Like these are all things that we can easily look at and say like, okay, well, it doesn't meet that. So next property is not going to work, because you know, I've gone down that rabbit hole too many times where you start digging into a property and you think it's great and everything, right? Especially in the beginning of my career, I remember spent a lot of time on this property and putting together like a contract and everything. And then it was like, oh, it's in a flood zone. And it's like, if I had taken just 5 minutes in the beginning and had my, you know, virtual assistants just go check the FEMA website, I would have seen it was in a flood zone and I would have saved myself so much time. So it's taken a lot of, you know, a lot of diving in and, you know, experience with it in order to create that checklist, but it's helped a ton. And then after that, we can start digging into more of the detailed stuff, right? Like the exact like price comparisons, unit price comparisons from all the facilities, the occupancies around the competitor facilities, the supply and demand. And even within that, right, it's like, hey, if it's oversupplied at 1 mile, like, just stop. You don't need to go through the full analysis. So it's still a work in progress, right? But building those workflows so it's clear to them, hey, okay, if it meets this, yes, go on. But if it doesn't, just stop right there. Like, we don't need to go any further.
Yeah, and the getting to know is the perfect kind of explanation to that. It's how can I kill a deal without wasting too much of my time, right? Because you got to be, you know, slightly pessimistic in anything you get presented, whether it's from, you know, direct to owner or whether it's a broker OM or whatever it is. You got to assume something in there might be a little funky and you got to try to find what that is as quick as possible that's going to kill the deal, right? Something side in there 9 times out of 10. So to have those rules, you know, underwrite it in 15 minutes, kind of move on with your day. And if it passes, do that next level. I agree. It's always the key. I like how you set it up with the VAs. I think it's pretty interesting. I don't know. I guess the way you have it set up with your VAs is slightly different from what I'd heard from others. Is some VAs are, you know, strictly like doing full underwriting, but the way you have it set up is kind of that initial pass and then like a further pass. So, like, what was that process like for you to set that up? Because obviously there's some learning curve to that, right? There's teaching a virtual assistant how to actually, you know, evaluate that. I know you've mentioned in the past, it's really kind of primarily video based where you'll record stuff. How was that experience for them once they got to that point where they were starting to actually look at these things? Like when they were ready to actually do it, like what was that iteration process for them?
Yeah. So I think you have to bring it back to hiring, right? Like just hiring the right person and the right virtual assistant is kind of tough to do. And so when I was first looking, I was going through all of the virtual assistant companies, right? Where it's like, hey, you just tell us you need a virtual assistant. We'll get you an interview with somebody. It'll be the perfect fit. You go from there and, you know, you're going to pay us like double, triple the rate, but you don't have to go through that process of hiring. So, I went through some of those interviews and I kind of realized that I was looking for a bit of a shortcut, you know, because I didn't want to put in the work of like, hey, I need to find the right person. I need to find a good VA. So I was spending my time doing this. And in reality, I was just wasting more time. You know, I eventually realized like, I need to go direct to like the open market, go to like Upwork or go to Fiverr and create a job description, exactly what I'm looking for, and like filter through and find those like great candidates, right? And then invite them to this job. Like, hey, I think this is something that could work for them. And then go through that negotiation process, or sorry, interview process, right? And so I think the first step there is like creating a job description of like what this person's going to do. And not, some of it is like actual tasks, right? But a lot of it is more conceptual. It's more like, yeah, you're going to be entering data, or you're going to be filtering through properties, but taking a step back further, like what does success look like in this role, right? And so in that job description, right, it's like, success looks like when I'm able to step away from property management and I'm not answering, you know, like calls or texts from self-storage customers, and I have like full faith in you and you are handling that, right? Like that's what success looks like. Or success looks like, hey, you're able to analyze these deals and just come to me and say like, here, this is a good deal, and present it to me, and then we move forward. Like that's what success is. And so I, you know, you have to find the right person, the right people who are eager to learn and stuff. And you have to have patience too, right? Like I kind of realized that if my, you know, team members aren't getting something or they're not being successful, that's me. That's my fault. It's not theirs. I'm not doing something right. Like, so it might be super obvious to me, but it's not clear enough to them. It's just like, how can you break it down further? How can you really automate it? How can you kind of put together like a clear workflow? Like, you know, if then, if not this, right? Like, so it's taken a long time to kind of get to where I'm at. And I'm still nowhere close to like, right, like where I want to be. But that's part of the journey and part of the process. And we're getting there.
Yeah. You mentioned like, what does success look like? So to relay that message positively, obviously that's like you mentioned starting in the interview process. How do you continue to highlight that with the VAs? So they know like, yeah, you're working on these tasks every day, but like, this is the bigger picture. Cause a lot of times hiring someone, they're not really necessarily seeing like the big pie. Right. So how do you kind of bring it all back home that way? Has there been like a deviation there or anything like that, or any examples?
Yeah. I'm still learning for sure. Yeah. But I'm going with the traction, like EOS model, you know, the entrepreneurial operating system. So a lot of it comes down to like KPIs, metrics, right? So it's, you know, they're being successful if they are meeting their KPIs and their metrics on a weekly basis, right? And when they're not, it's like, okay, you know, I end up spending too much time on something, and I have to jump in, and that's not where we want to be. So, you know, we still work through a lot of things, but every week we have a team meeting and we go through those metrics, and it's like, hey, did you meet this criteria? Did you not? It's just like, it's just data, right? It's like, yes or no. Like how many, did you analyze the deal, every deal you were given, right? Like, did you get the analysis done within 48 hours, or I think it's now 72 hours, right? Did you get it back within that turnaround time? Did you handle all of the open like property management texts and emails and calls like did you get back to them within 24 hours, that sort of thing? So there's different criteria for each team member. But, you know, I've also implemented one-on-one meetings, right? So we have the team meeting, but I'm also meeting with each individual one-on-one once a week to kind of review and teach them. So a lot of what I do too is, you know, I will do it myself and I have to be able to do it and master it, right? And I'll record myself. I'll get on a Zoom and I'll record myself and I'll walk through the entire process and I'll talk through it as I'm doing it with instructions and say, hey, this is how we do it. And I'll store that recording in Google Drive in a shared folder and they can see that. So rather than me having to go and teach them every time, they can kind of go back to the recording and rewatch and learn at their own pace. And that also helps me with scale because as I bring more people in, they're able to go to those videos, the training videos, and look at them and then catch on quick with themselves. So that's the process I've been going with.
Yeah. And I think you have the system to build the system, if that makes sense. You know, you have the kind of outline to create the videos and the kind of location to put them and the outline on how to make sure you get trained up. So that's probably the biggest thing, right? It takes a lot of work to get that moving. But once you have that going, that's helpful. You've mentioned like roadblocks, like removing yourself further from the business in general. We've talked about that. So what does that kind of look like for you? Moving forward, I kind of highlight this in one of my questions, but I'm going to cheat a little bit here. Like what does it seem like for you to further remove yourself from the business to focus on the more visionary stuff?
Yeah, I think, yeah, I consider myself very much a visionary and not so much of the detail oriented, integrator right now. In my business, I played both roles, but, long-term, you know, I want to have that integrator on board and working with them, him or her directly. So that they're kind of managing the people and the team and managing those KPIs. And I'm more leading where we want to go. So, you know, I think for me, success will, for my role, right, eventually be me focusing on the syndication side of things, focusing more on capital raising, focusing on, you know, making connections, networking, right? Like this stuff here, right? Getting on a podcast, banking relationships, that sort of thing, right? Like those are the things that you don't outsource that stuff. I mean, you can hire the right people, right? And like, that's good too. And eventually we will, but that's where I want to focus more on my time, more of my time rather than getting in and, you know, drilling into a specific location or a specific facility and, you know, calculating their average rent per square foot. Like, that's not the best use of my time. Like, then, like, I have to be moving the business forward. We have to be moving forward. My team needs to be focused on, like, what we have, like, on our plate now or we've already closed.
And that circles back all the way to the beginning where we're talking about motivation and excelling in what you like to do, right? Because it's not just like you can do the nitty gritty, you can do the detail oriented integrator stuff, but it's kind of not your lane. You'd rather be, you know, managing the key relationships and moving the business forward. So it's only going to get better as you try to elevate yourself into that role, you know, more and more every day. So it's funny how, you know, how that works out.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's interesting to hear your perspective on storage because, you know, I don't always see that. I've actually had a few people on the show kind of as of late, actually one person that you've partnered with. I don't always get to see the nitty gritty on the details of what it takes to underwrite these deals. Surprisingly enough, I haven't done a ton of system stuff on it yet. I should probably get someone to really dive deep on systems with me. But yeah, I think it's interesting, like the self-storage, like you mentioned, it's kind of a little bit more of like a demand driven thing when you're talking about scaling, like, the development, right? It's tough to like justify in certain areas, and it's kind of black and white, like actually just having demand based on just a few simple metrics. So appreciate all the insights there.
Yeah, for sure. It's easy to get caught up in the emotional stuff of like, this is the perfect property and I love it.
Shiny OMs and stuff like that, right? So yeah.
But if you really just like boil it down to checklists and like, does it meet this? It becomes black and white. It's just like yes or no. So that makes decision-making a lot easier. And yeah, you miss out on some deals, right? Because it's like, well, this area is a little bit gray, but, you know, and maybe it'd work, maybe not. But you can't really scale at that. If you're going to look at every single property or every single, you know, facility that way, well, you can only get through so many. So it's it's getting to that systematized approach, and it's difficult to do, but you know, everyone's looking for different stuff too, right? Like my buy criteria is not going to be the same as your buy criteria. And that's fine. That's kind of the beauty of the industry too, because, you know, different people are looking for different things, different returns, and they're going about it in different ways.
And what, you got three deals closed. How many did it take to look at least on the high level spreadsheet there to get that done? Do you know? Top of head?
Not oh, wow. I mean, like I mentioned, I decided to go full-time self-storage. This is about 2 years ago now, right? Yeah. That was mid-pandemic summer. It's probably June of 2022 when I was listening to that Bigger Pockets podcast. And I was like, this is where I need to go. At the time, though, I was still working at W-2 for a while. When I went full-time into self-storage, it still took me a year and... I don't know, a quarter to close on my first two deals. So it wasn't easy for a long time there. You know, I was struggling. You can force things, you can force deals, but that's just going to come back to bite you. So it took a year and 4 months or so to close on my first two deals. And when I did though, things started accelerating from there.
Yeah. And now is probably as good a time as ever to make sure you're looking at the right stuff. Choppy waters right now. So
I know, right? Yeah. You really have to buy right. But, you know, I think fundamentally, I started in real estate back in like 2017. I started looking at it before then, right? Like, yeah, I don't know, beginning of 2017, let's say. And I knew, you know, the teachings then, like Bigger Pockets stuff, is focused on cash flow, right? It's like, you obviously you want appreciation and you want these assets to gain value, and you can force appreciation, you know, and you can, you know, the market changes too, and there's just like gradual appreciation, right? But you don't want to just buy for that. You don't want to become a speculative investor. And so I've really carried that into self-storage. I think especially the last 2 years when interest rates have dropped and the market's going crazy, whether you're in residential housing or you're in self-storage or a different asset class, it's easy to get swept up in that. And it's hard to stay in the fundamentals of buying cash flowing assets that are going to, you know, ideally build equity over time. But the truth is, like, I don't have any control over like market cap rates, because I don't have control over what the Federal Reserve does, right? I don't have control over those interest rates. So, but what I do is I buy, again, cash flowing facilities and cash flowing rental properties.
Yeah. And especially you talk about, you know, getting more and more into syndications, you absolutely have to make sure you're doing deals that are going to protect investors' money. So that's the end all be all. Sean, yeah, really appreciate it. I want to hit these five key questions before we sign off, if you're ready for them.
Yeah, I'm ready for them. Let's go.
So first one, if you could only pick one trait that explains your success, what is that trait and why?
Yeah, I would say persistence. I'm a very persistent person. You know, when I set my mind to something, I'm going to do it. That's just kind of wired in me. I was brought up in a household where it's like, you know, you can be anything you want to be, you can do anything you want to do, but you can't give up, you know, and you have to keep going and don't quit at that, right? Like Brandon Turner, he talks a lot about like quitting. Well, you have to quit to like outsource things, which is fine. That's different, right? It's like, I don't want to be analyzing every deal every day. Like I need to quit that so I could hand it off to somebody else so I can focus on like higher level things. But overall, like persistence and not quitting on like where you're going, where you're heading, that's really paid off for me. So
yeah, it's not like you're quitting the mission. You're just changing the way you're going to get the mission done, right? Like that's what it is.
Yeah, exactly.
Like you might have to go a different road, a different approach, but as long as you just keep going, you know, you'll figure it out. So yeah. And then what is the most uncharacteristic thing you have done in your business, Sean, and why did you do it?
Yeah, you know, I've thought about this a lot, and I think, you know, it comes down to talking about your failures, right? Like it's easy to get up here and just say like, hey, these are all the successes I've had, or for anybody to do that. But it's a lot more difficult to talk about like what went wrong and what your failures are, especially when you're getting out and you know, you're going on a podcast or you're going and you're talking to groups and you're kind of, you know, telling that to the world. Like, that's not an easy thing to do. So more lately, I have been talking about like my journey and my struggles again, like in the W-2 world and like going through multiple jobs, getting fired from different jobs before discovering real estate and finding like my true passion of like what I wanted to do and like where I wanted to be and going down that avenue. So again, not an easy thing to talk about. It is uncharacteristic, but I think it's important to do as well.
Yeah, it's like that. You want to present like the best image of yourself, right? But also right. at the same time, ironically enough, like everyone just wants to like know the real you and invest with the real you. So like even disregard invest, like they just want to know Sean for Sean. They want to know Dave for Dave. So like just like wipe away the face, just like put out, you know, just be yourself and you'll probably actually be way more successful that way. So
I think of the, I don't know if you've seen the Office episode with Michael Scott and he kind of goes through that interview thing where he says, I don't remember it exactly, but he's talking about how like, you know, like, so what's your biggest weakness? And he just talks about like how great he is, you know, like how like his biggest weakness is like his strength and here's why. And he's the greatest thing ever. And it's just funny because I think that's a lot of what interviewing is, right? And it's like, it comes down to that. But authenticity, I think, comes from being open and talking about the things that have gone wrong too. I think it's just as important. And everyone goes through, you know, everyone struggles and you don't always see that with people, but I think the majority of problems that people face, they're the same. Yeah.
And then you give those interviewee type answers to someone in real life, they'll see right through that all day. So
I know,
you know, it's like, okay, Sean's a phony, like not going to talk to him anymore. So can you name a time, Sean, where you felt like you were not going to end up successful and how did you overcome that fear?
Yeah, you know, I think just to further that point that I was talking about, you know, I was, after I was fired from my CPA job I mentioned in the beginning, I moved to Chicago. And I was like, you know, that's okay. Got my CPA license. Like, I paid off all of my student loans. I'm going to go to Chicago. Just started dating this girl. Now it's now my wife, right? And like, things were going fantastic personally. And I was like, all right, I can overcome this job firing. So I moved there and I go into a job and I just hate the job. Like, I hated it from the beginning. And, you know, I kind of talked about how, talked about how, like, you know, like if you're passionate about something, like you become knowledgeable about it, you build confidence that it shows in that job performance. And it just didn't happen for me that way. Like, I didn't like it. I never built that confidence. I didn't do well. I didn't have the job performance that, you know, they were expecting. And some of that was technical, right? Like some of it was like entering, it was no longer like an accounting job. It was entering more of like a finance position. But ultimately, I just didn't build the confidence in what I was doing. And so when I got fired after a year from that job, and at that point, you know, you kind of go through those things and you feel like, well, yeah, like what am I going to do? You know, you feel like a bit of a failure. You don't know where you're going. You know, and at that point, I always knew I wanted to be an entrepreneur, knew I wanted to do my own thing, but I didn't know what that was yet. So I didn't really have that path. So it's tough because you start, you know, for a little bit, you start kind of doubting yourself until you discover what you want to do. Luckily I was able to do that. You know, it was like shortly after that I read Rich Dad Poor Dad and I discovered Bigger Pockets and I kind of found a path and I was like, okay, I have some direction now. Like, this is calling me. This is what I need to do. This is what I want to do. Like, simple next step is like, okay, house hacking. It's an easy way. You can use an FHA loan. You can buy a few units at one time in one building. It's a low down payment. I can get qualified. I just need to go get approved and I need to get another W-2. And like, that's how I can enter into this world. And that lit a spark under me, you know, like that was my next step and things grew from there.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. I mean, it's, you go from like, I'm assuming, you know, like a pretty serious low, like, you know, just got fired from the job that you pretty much hated anyways, maybe not like heartbroken, but like, shit, I got fired, right? And then you go to like, okay, I'm going to like pick myself up and just like do the entrepreneur thing. Like that's a talk about like authentic Sean. Like that's pretty impressive to be able to do that. Right. Like a lot of people's egos would get hit pretty hard after something like that. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah. And it did for sure. Right. It's not like, it's like, I'm proud of it. It's not something I'm proud of, but that's just what happened. Everybody has different paths. And I think that was my path, right? Like, you know, I think I needed to kind of go through that and realize like, hey, this is not the direction that you are supposed to be going or that you want to go down. Like I didn't want to build myself up in, you know, like a big corporate company and become a CFO or anything like that. Like that didn't excite me or create happiness at all. But the idea of being able to control my own time and work for myself and create financial freedom and build passive, you know, sources of cash flow and really be able to create like magical like moments and time like with my family and travel, things like that, that excited me. And so I was like, okay, this is what I need to do. It's pretty obvious to me.
Yeah, that's excellent. And then we'll flip that one. So can you name a time where something in your business went perfectly and what did you do to make that a reality?
Yeah, so I thought about this and I was kind of curious, like, do you have anybody who's just like, yeah, this went absolutely perfectly?
No, almost everyone says, yeah, nothing goes perfectly is usually okay. How they start that question. So,
All right. Okay. Well, yeah. I'm not going to be the first one. Yeah. Nothing does go perfectly. You know, I think that's just the beauty of life and the struggle. And you have to figure out where you want to go and how to get there. And I think perfect is it's a zigzagging road. So I think one thing that has gone very well lately is just like the mindset stuff and the masterminds. This year, you know, I've been like together, you and I were both in Ascend with GoBundance, and I joined Jason Dree's, like his Mindset Academy, and I'm in a mastermind there, things like that. And that's paying off a lot, right? Because you start surrounding yourself by people who have similar interests and people who want to go out and build their own businesses. And you kind of surround yourself with those elevated mindsets, and that starts paying off. I think, you know, like I really believe in an abundance type of mentality. And I think your mindset creates your reality, right? So the more you surround yourself with those type of people, the better your future is going to be.
Yeah. You couldn't have nailed it better. It's like you mentioned, like the zigzag, right? Like it's not perfect, but just keeping yourself with the people that are going to keep you honest and keep you on the right track will do it pretty much. So like you'll find a way.
Sure.
And then last one here, you know, you mentioned the mindset, how you've kind of been dealing with that, but maybe it's a different answer. What have you been focusing on lately to improve yourself or your business?
Yeah, so, you know, I have been focusing on staying out of a reactionary type of mindset and day and really owning my time. It's easy to wake up and just go and just react to that first email and jump in, right? React to that first phone call, that first text, or whatever it is. But that's not how you move forward. That's not how you grow yourself. That's not how you expand or grow your business. In order to do that, you have to really like plan out those things. So I've been blocking off my time in my calendar, right? Like I heard somebody say the other day, it's like, you know, why do we just put interruptions on our calendar? Like, why not put those, you know, like revenue producing activities on our calendar, those growth activities on our calendar. So for me, it's been journaling. I've been journaling just like, I don't know if you've read The Gap in the Game, but just at night, right? Like my three daily wins and three wins that are going to happen tomorrow. And then just setting aside time, like a couple hours a week for strategic planning, right? To sit down and get away from it all and just strategically plan on my business. So those sort of things have become very important to me. Because if you don't block off the time for it, it's just not going to happen. Your calendar is going to get filled up one way or another.
It's a challenge, man. It's a challenge. I think the thing I do at night is like, you talk about the time blocking, like I know, like I do the whole like brain dump, like what do I got to actually do tomorrow? And then I was like, okay, like what actually matters? And it's like those first two or three things, like those are on the block first. Like, okay, before I do anything else, like open the email, whatever, it's like, let me hit those two things before I even touch the rest of it, you know? Like,
if you can get through something before even opening your computer, right? Like, whether it's like journaling or strategic planning or anything, like, man, get through those things and do those high level, like important growth type of things before you open it up. Because once you open up that computer, even if it's to go to, you know, your notebook on your computer,
right down the rabbit
hole, email pops up, you know, right, and it's like, see it and you have to react to it. It happens all the time. So I really try to get through that stuff before jumping online.
Absolutely. Sean, we covered a lot, man. We hopped between the mindset stuff and the self-storage stuff. I love both of it. So glad to have you on and impart that knowledge. Hope the listener got, you know, a ton out of it too. In case they do want to reach out, you want to let them know how they can reach you today.
Yeah. So the best way to reach me is probably over email. You can email me at Sean@mavenstorage.com. So that's Sean@mavenstorage.com. And then we have a couple websites too, mavenstorage.com. Another one's mavenequities.com. Maven Storage is more on the buying self-storage side, and Maven Equities is more on the syndication side of things. But go ahead and do that. I don't know if you put links in the bio or anything, but I can throw you my calendar link too. And I'm happy to, you know, schedule a time with anybody. And if you want to reach out, just shoot me an email or book a calendar time and we'll talk.
Sean, thanks again so much. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks, Dave. Looking forward to talking soon.
Thank you for listening to the show. I don't take your time and attention for granted and appreciate that you would spend it with me. If you enjoyed this show or any of my previous shows, it would be a huge help if you would rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts or your favorite podcasting service, or even just share the episode with a friend. And if you'd like help from me or would like to talk about real estate investing further, feel free to visit the show notes for more information, or you can visit davidtravis.com.